Hello and welcome back to the Dive and Dig News Podcast. My name's Lucy Blue and today I'm talking to a colleague from the Ministry of Culture in Egypt, Dr. Mohamed Abdel Al-Magid, who is an underwater archaeologist and an expert in ancient ship construction. Mohamed recently got involved in a very interesting ship reconstruction project at the recently reopened Greco-Roman Museum, Alexandria, Egypt. Here is Mohamed to tell us all about this exciting project. So, Mohamed, welcome. Thank you very much indeed for agreeing to be interviewed for the Dive and Dig News Podcast. We have actually got some really exciting news about the long-awaited recent opening of the Greco-Roman Museum. You're very renowned for your expertise in this area. And so this is why you became involved with a certain exhibit in the new Greco-Roman Museum. So could you tell us a bit about the key exhibit in our biased maritime minds in the new museum in Alexandria, or the newly renovated museum?
Yeah, as you know, Alexandria is the daughter of the sea, if we can say. Usually they call it Pearl of the Mediterranean. And commerce and trade was one of the main activities of the city. And it is one of the reasons that maintained this city living for a long time. So they decided in the museum to exhibit a part of what the trade can do for the city. And they asked me to rebuild a replica of a boat from the late Roman period to the Byzantine period. And that's what we have did at this time.
And I was actually lucky enough to go and visit it with you a couple of months ago, just after it opened. But as far as I'm concerned, it is a wonderful feat of creativity, really. I mean, it's marvellous, because when you approach it, you see, it sort of comes at you out of the darkness in a way, and you suddenly see this incredible shape. So essentially, you've taken a longitudinal, so you've effectively cut the boat in half down the middle.
We had a long discussion with the scenario committee of what they need exactly, the date and the shape. So the date, they said that they have the big numbers of amphoras that they have is from the late period to the Byzantine period. So here is the date.
So basically, you've got this large collection of amphoras from this later period in the museum archives, I presume. And so the idea then is to replace the amphora into the ship, in a ship that basically mirrors the period in which these amphoras would have been transported around the Mediterranean, Eastern Mediterranean.
Exactly. This was the idea. So we'll have two objects to display. One is the ship, the container, that contains containers.
Also.
And the second point is how they want to display it. They want a section or they want a longitudinal view of the ship itself. And we became to what you have seen there is the longitudinal view of the ship with a closed part, in order that the visitors can imagine how the boat was.
Before we go on to discuss how beautifully constructed it is, and it really is beautifully constructed, I'm just curious to know what evidence you use to determine the shape of the boat that you decided on for that period.
First of all, they told me you have here 14 meters for the display. And one of the head of the scenario committee wanted a very high draught in order to put a lot of amphora inside. So I went to one of the dissertation that were made in France that present seven shipwrecks, and I searched inside for the period and the dimensions. And finally, we were agreed to have a Saint-Gervais 3, which is from the south of France, and it belonged to the second century and then and after. It was, in fact, it was longer. It was about 60 meter 80. We make it smaller. I made the 2/3 of this boat.
Mm-hmm. So basically, you're taking, I presume, fairly substantial remains of the Saint-Gervais. I think that's the right, yeah. And using that archaeological evidence to then replicate the construction. And so what's the key construction approach? I mean, obviously, we're looking at a period when, as I recall, that the shell of the boat is determining the shape predominantly. Yeah. So how is the boat held together, in effect?
Yeah, first I have to point for a step in the middle. This step is that what we had is only a drawing with the curves, but this one was redrawn again, and with the help of Nesreen El Ghali.
Yes, one of our HFF scholars, yes. She just completed her PhD in Oxford, yeah.
Yes.
With your help as well.
She made a very nice work because she rescanned again and redrew it again, and then she gave me the whole lines. That's what I took to the shipyard, and we started working on it.
And that's where, I mean, that's amazing. Thank you, Nesreen, for all your help. But the shipyard for me, I mean, I've been lucky enough to see the exhibit, but the shipyard, as ever, it's the place where I feel most at home, was just incredible. And these are people, these are people that you worked with previously on a previous reconstruction. Can you tell me a bit about the shipyard and the team that you were working with? Because they were incredible workmen.
Yes, this shipyard I have chosen also in 2008 to build a replica of Hatshepsut boat. This is a floating hypothesis, but we had a lot of details from the construction of such ships. So they were very clever in working on it. So it was easy to come again to them, have another adventure together. With the confidence that they will not be this difficult like any other shipyard that they don't know how to do.
Yes, I guess, but Hatshepsut, I mean, they're still learning though, aren't they? Because the Hatshepsut reconstruction, this is one from sort of late Bronze Age, so it's much earlier. Whereas now we've moved sort of 2,000 years into the future, although we're still 2,000 years old-ish. I guess the construction approach was somewhat different, but what you're saying in effect was they had that experience of building ships from antiquity as opposed to the modern era.
Yeah, that's what happened, in fact, because they knew that it is shell first, but the ancient boat or the Egyptian boat was frameless. This boat has 55 frame. The other one is totally shell first. This one is shell first, but with what we call active frame. The shell guide the first part of the construction, and then the frames will guide the second part in alternation. So they learned a new methods. I have an anecdote, for example, that they started to distribute the tenons in the old way. Old-fashioned, and they wanted...
Just because not all our listeners are going to know, in the Greco-Roman ship, Roman really, of the mortise and tenon construction, where you basically insert tenons into holes, and that's the way the planks are fixed together.
Yes, in Egyptian shipbuilding tradition, they had long, called them tanks, that we put in openings in both sides of the planks, but they were somehow long and thick to fill the mortise. But in the Roman period, now we are at the late period also, the tenons were not really important, but they keep the shape of the boat. They are very important for the pre-assemblage of the boat, and also they will help in the securing the planks together. But tenons were smaller, also they had small pegs to secure them, and that's what the in the yard, they didn't understand at the beginning why there is this difference.
Yeah.
But finally, they were convinced when they were putting the second and the third strakes, and they found that they have hard time in order to push the new plank, and that's why they started to follow the instructions again.
It's that whole process as well of what particularly skilled craftsmen, such as the people that you were working with, what they learn and understand about those processes that, you know, obviously we can't go back and talk to a Roman shipbuilder, but through that sort of action, we can actually learn a little bit about the thought process, what goes on in the mind of the boat builder, as I sometimes say. And I think that's the most fascinating thing about what we learn as archaeologists through those actions.
In fact, it was also a good opportunity for many, many students from the Center for Alexandria and also from the department to come and follow the construction of the boat inside the museum, to see and touch also what they have learned on slides and with talking. So now they were there every day, they saw together, and they helped also in putting together the parts of the ship.
Wow, that is really amazing, because, you know, having taught many people myself, like you, you know, sometimes you have a mock-up, a little model, and you show them how the mortises go in, and it's just, but seeing a whole ship sort of being constructed in front of you must be an incredible experience. What an opportunity. That was a great idea to do that as well. But the other thing that I found really incredible, because I came to visit, I don't know, I think it was in the April, and you said, well, we have to get it done by early summer. And I'm thinking, yes, right, that's not going to happen. But it was amazing how quickly they put this ship together. OK, half a ship, but still, especially as they didn't necessarily fully grasp the, you know, the construction method. I was absolutely blown away by that. It was incredible, the speed in which they built that ship.
At the beginning, the project was, it has to be, as I said, for 4 months, which is really not easy to build a boat of 12.60 meters by 5 meters and 2.70 meters high in this small period. Also, it has to be built on two phases. I mean, first in the shipyard and then in the museum. Unfortunately, we had the orders after 1 month that we have to move to the museum because they will close the opening where the we will put the ship inside.
Gosh, I didn't realize that. So you had 1 month to build before you had to...
Yeah.
So we had 1 month to finish the shell from outside, which means that you have to bend to the form all the planks using the hot water. And then you have to continue everything inside for shaping frames, shaping the beams, shaping the shaping everything else and putting them together. This was completed there in the museum. We have been working from 8 o'clock of the morning to 8 o'clock of the evening. In the yard, sometimes they worked about 16 hours in order to finish the first phase.
Wow. What a great team. What a great team. That really is. And I mean, Mohammed, as I said, I've been lucky enough to see it, and I'm definitely going to go back when I'm in Alexandria again. But I think the main message to our listeners is, if you're in Egypt, go to Alexandria, definitely visit the Greco-Roman Museum, because overall it has transformed, but that particular exhibit is quite remarkable, and I think you and the team and everybody that helped should be really, really proud of it, because it really shows excellent craftsmanship, but also gives you that insight, as you say, into the ship, the construction, how the cargo's put on the boat, what it's like to be in that space. So thank you for sharing this with us, and congratulations.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, what can I say, but don't miss out on the Greco-Roman Museum if you are in Alexandria. Thanks to Mohammed and his team of expert shipwrights, and thanks to you all for listening. I hope you enjoyed this Dive and Dig news podcast, brought to you by the Honor Frost Foundation, a charity that supports the development of maritime archaeology in the Eastern Mediterranean. Thanks for listening.